Hello, I'm Steve Rosvold, Chief Learning Officer of CFO.University. Welcome to this special episode of CFO Talk. Let's be honest, right from the start, most enterprise AI initiatives are failing to deliver actual financial value. We get caught up in the technology inputs and the shiny pilots, while the hard questions about business outcomes, risk, and behavioral adoption get left behind. Today, we're bringing together a group of industry and AI leaders to talk about what it actually takes to scale AI to sustainable enterprise value. Now, if you're looking for a highly technical deep dive into algorithms or a vendor sales pitch about the latest chatbot, this discussion probably isn't for you, and that is perfectly fine. But if you are a finance or business leader who is tired of running isolated science experiments, if you want to know how to measure actual workflow adoption, how good your data really needs to be, and how to build a governance framework that acts as a steering wheel rather than a brake pedal, then you are in the right place. We're going to lay out a practical roadmap to help you decide if your organization is truly ready to move from AI ambition to real business impact. And let's start right away introducing our panel. First, we have stampeding in from Calgary, Alberta. It's Prashant Sothakal. Prashant is the managing director at DBP Institute and also a founding partner with D2A2. Marching in from the home of the Spartans, we have from Lansing, Michigan, Shika Mohandra. And Shika is the data science manager at Delta Dental of Michigan. We have galloping in from Dallas, Texas, Srini Gadar. Shridi is the Global Data and Analytics at Marsh Risk. And last but not least, we have hustling in from the Big Apple, New York City, James Kalisa. And James is the Head of Innovation and Design at Regeneron. We have an AI problem. And let me tell you what that is. Let me tell you how it gets exploited in some of the news reports that have come out lately. So we have MIT reports that 95% of enterprise Gen AI pilots fail to produce measurable financial returns. We have Gartner, over 50% of Gen AI projects fail or never scale. And then McKinsey says that nearly two-thirds of McKinsey's clients say their organizations have not yet begun scaling AI across the enterprises. So we have a problem with AI. So why is AI initiatives failing? And we have just the person to kick off with that, with Prashant Sothakal. Prashant, why are AI projects failing?
There are many reasons why these AI projects are failing. One of the main reasons happened to be we take the route from a technology side. We try to understand how this technology or the tools are going to solve the problem. Like the most common questions could be how OpenAI is better than Claude. How is this LLM model faster than this LLM model? So most of the discussions happen to be focused more on the technology side, but very little on the business side. So my view is that, of course, you can tackle this problem in multiple ways, but one of the ways to solve this problem is to go from the outcome or from the end. What are we trying to achieve? What are the goals which we are trying to reach by implementing AI? But if you start with an end in mind, I think the chances of converting this is much, much higher. The success of implementing AI solutions is much, much higher.
We focus on a lot of times the inputs. And what you're saying is focus on the outputs. Start with the outputs, not the inputs.
So start with the outcome. Start with your objective. Start with your goals. I would go with start with the end in mind.
Well, as a follow-up question to that, what should we consider, you know, for our AI improvement projects? What kind of list should we have and check boxes to say this fits?
So that's again a great question. So building on what I just said a few seconds back, I would start with the end in mind. So many of my clients and prospects ask me, okay, this is a common answer, which we keep on hearing from everybody. So what do you mean with this? What do you mean start with the objective? Start with business needs in mind. So basically, it's about two major components. You can think about like a Venn diagram of two circles. The first circle is high-value business transactions. Because ultimately, when we talk about data, what really matters is transactions. For example, I was working for a transportation company, and I asked them, how many customer masters you have? They said, 500,000. Oh my gosh, this is really great. But tell me, in the last 18 months, of this 500,000 customers, how many did we do business with? And believe it or not, the number was just 1,700. So the point is, though you might be having 500,000 customer data, what really matters is the 1,700 transactions which are associated with orders, invoices, remittances, shipments, deliveries, so on and so forth. So ultimately, that's where the performance comes into the picture. The performance comes when those transactions hit the general ledger. So that's part of the first circle. Now, the next thing is, do you need all the transactions as part of your analytics or AI projects? The answer is no. You need a subset of those transactions. Okay. So what are those subsets of transactions? Tell me those decisions which are associated with those transactions. What decisions are really mattering when it comes to AI projects? It doesn't mean that I'm looking at every data, every systems, every kind of a transaction here. I'm looking for only those transactions where decision is associated. So overall, when we look at the starting point, it's a combination of two circles, high value transactions and high value decisions. An intersection of these two circles is where those AI opportunities actually exist. So we have been hearing about this thing about data lake, data swarms, and all those things. So people say, that, how do you convert this? How do you make sure that we don't have data swamps? So I tell them, objective. Start with objective. You don't need to bring every data from every system in the world in your company to your data lake. That if that happens, management becomes extremely complex. You just need a small percentage of data. In my view, it's about 15 to 20% of the data which is required to run your analytics and AI project. And those data should be in your Snowflake, in your Databricks, or whichever data platform which you are using. So long story short, combination of transactions and decisions is where you need to start with. And one of the tip which I have, how do you find out this, is KPIs. Okay, if you have those KPIs, the chances of increasing that, finding those intersection between those two circles is much, much higher. Okay.
Wow.
I'll stop here.
That's great. No, that's really helpful. Really helpful to zoom in. That's some great learning already. And now I want to turn to James and talk about, we're all talking about return on investment for AI and how do we calculate that? And it's really an elusive number for a lot of companies, for a lot of CFOs, for a lot of business leaders. So I'd like, James, if you could kind of go through how we should be looking at returns in the AI space and maybe shed some light that we're struggling with right now on that issue.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Steve. And I should also mention, I guess I should have worn my I Love New York t-shirt today. So sorry to let you down. ROI is really tricky with AI because it's been around for a couple of years, but it's still new to a lot of folks. And just for clarity, you know, AI is not new to a whole lot of people, but the popularity of AI and the momentum that it has, I think, is. So on ROI, I would encourage this audience to measure adoption and not just activity. And there's a big difference, I think, because most AI ROI debates are comparing activity. That's the pilots we run, licenses we bought, what APIs people have access to or across what areas or what programs, maybe the demo that impressed people when presentation was given. But the actual value is hidden almost in a changed workflow. So what are people doing with a given AI? That's blanket AI, and that's AI as a component of whatever tool that is going to be out there being built or bought. I think the measurement itself is where the number lies. So if somebody cites a vanity metric like, hey, we got X number of users, what are those users actually doing with the platform and leveraging AI for? And are they leveraging the right model within AI if there's more than one model that's accessible for the given task? Is it appropriate to achieving the goal and marching the organization toward achieving a goal as part of a tactic? Or if somebody says, you know, adoption 68%. Well, 68% of what? You've got to divide by the licenses. You're measuring procurement there, not behavior. I think I was reading something, I think it was ZS, that recently found that only about a third of employees even had approved access to the tools that were being released, and only about 1 in 10 of those were actually using the tools often enough to make it worthwhile. So that's an order of magnitude. Yeah, I'll cut to the chase. Beyond simple cost savings, what I put on the scorecard is, you know, the cost of the tools, the value that a lot of the finance teams are undercutting, that I've seen in conversations across the regulated life science industry, is speed. What's the quality? What's the risk? You know, how are people balancing governance there for control? How are we monitoring the errors, reducing rework, all while maintaining a clean audit trail? I think that's important, especially in a regulated world, because that's real money. And then lastly, I think capacity release. when we look at AI, you know, everybody talks about efficiency and where it can slot in and pop in and subcomponents of processes that fit into a greater envelope or stack of SOPs. But the number that people aren't putting on the slide is, this is how much it costs to launch the thing. And then after go live, this is how much it costs to run it. And I think that that's often a miss.
Very interesting. I mean, those things you talk about, speed and better decisions, quality of decisions, all could be quantified in some way, but that takes work. And that's where that the next phase is, being able to then quantify that in a way that you just described. Quantify, what does speed mean? What does quality mean? And then the top line side, how does that, and the CFOs are really interested in, how does it flow through the P&L? Where does it show up? There's not an AI benefit line on our P&L anywhere, right? It's all buried in all kinds of other places. So thank you for that. I want to turn to Shika and talk about, you know, people are building these impressive proof of concept, but very few people are making it sustainable and work. So can you talk about enterprise capabilities and how people, success that you're building into longer term sustainable use rather than pilots that kind of fail?
Steve, this is a great question, because the way I like to think about it and explain it to, say, the execs in our organization or the other organizations that we speak with is, like, let's start thinking about AI as, like, using the electricity analogy, okay? When electricity was first discovered, nobody really celebrated electricity. But with AI, every time there's a pilot and it sparks, everybody celebrates, like, great, it works. Yes, technology works. But tying back to what Prashant said, which is, I feel like the clincher, if you have to really create products or usability or like a refrigerator, you got to think about everything else that goes around electricity to make it really useful and manageable for a user. And, you know, in this case, it's a business user. So the way I think about it is, like, there are about four main things that, you know, have to happen for an AI pilot to really succeed in the real world, not just spark, you know, and give shiny thoughts out there. So the first one that I believe is super critical, which kind of ties to the ROI and whatever James said, and to what Prashant said in the beginning, is business ownership. So not just a data science or an IT world technology mindset. If the ROI is there, if the project is prioritized, who's the business champion, kind of championing it all the way to realize business value. The second one, and kind of the most important one, is the data readiness. Again, Prashant touched upon this. You know, think of it as, is if your raw material isn't right, nothing the AI technology is going to do is going to get it right. It has to be scalable. It has to be ready. It has to be trustworthy. The third one is something super critical, which in my opinion, sometimes organizations tend to think about as a mile 10 problem, but it's actually a mile zero problem, which is your security and risk management. Especially coming from an insurance world, this is a super key thing to think about right from the get-go, and not when the pilots, we've spent a lot of money on the pilot itself. And the fourth one, I really think it's super important. Another one that gets easily missed is your change management. That's another example of, like, we think we'll start engaging the users or the wider audience once it's all ready, but it should always, the adoption, as Prashant said, is key. It should always be a day one thought and a plan rather than, like, you know, before or after the pilot is complete.
Really interesting that what you've talked about, those four areas, have nothing about the technology. Does it work? Doesn't it work? It's all about leadership, management, assigning responsibilities. So really interesting that it comes down to the management side, not the technology. And I think we kind of get caught up in that sometimes. Thank you for that, Shika. That was excellent. Prashant, you know, we've touched on data twice now. Shika touched on it and you'd mentioned it earlier. So, you know, tell us more about how good data has to be, kind of expand on that idea, because that does scare, I know, a lot of CFOs, a lot of business leaders. Do we have the data that we can really do this on? You know, that whole idea that bad data makes bad decisions. I think you're going to debunk that for us.
Yeah. John, Steve, I'm going to say something which might be very uncomfortable for a few people. The first one is, there is nothing called 100% data quality. That doesn't exist. Because a data, all said and done, is a reflection of the past. And the business, there is always a lag between data origination and data analysis. So there is a delay, which could be seconds, which could be days, which could be even months, for example. maintaining that synchronization between what is actually happening in the business to what is actually captured is unrealistic. And given that we are living in a such a volatile and uncertain world today, where there is a lot of changes happening constantly, expecting 100% data quality is unrealistic. Now, the next question is, if 100% data quality is unrealistic, what should we aspire for? That's where I said earlier, the intersection of two things, transactions and decisions. A combination of that is what is required to run your analytics and data projects. But one thing which I'm building on what Shikha said about organizational capabilities, the organization capabilities in the AI world relies primarily on a very important thing, which is probabilistic thinking. Because we have built systems which are deterministic in nature. Like, for example, what happened last year? What happened last quarter? So everything like ERP, CRM, which are pretty much deterministic. Whereas AI is probabilistic. Why probabilistic? Because it is associated with decision. And any decision which you take, anything, think about any decision which you have taken, whether it's joining Kellogg, for example, for in James's case, or moving from India to US in Shikha's case, as all those decisions involved an element of futuristic thinking. We think that the future is going to be like this. That's why I'm making a decision. So when we talk about prediction, which is future, that means there is a good probability that you don't have the data in your company. So you need to look for that data, which is outside the company, which could come from third-party data, public data, data products, so on and so forth. So the second point, which I'm saying after my 100% data quality, which doesn't exist, is number two. You need to look for data outside your company as well. There is a good chance that the data which you need for AI is not there in your company because you are running your company and the data which you have captured is primarily for operations and compliance and not primarily for decision making. So you need to be open for that kind of thinking. That's the second point which I'm saying, which is to look for, be open to get acquired data from other places. Of course, I've written a lot about on this on my book on data quality. People can see how to build data quality as well. But once you get it, I've talked about the two popular frameworks which I have, which is called as the CACTUS framework to assess the data quality dimensions. And next, number two, the FAIR framework to make sure that the quality data which you have built is usable. There is no point in building a quality data set and keeping it inside. You need to make sure that it is usable. How do you make sure that it is usable? That's where my second framework, which is a FAIR framework, comes into the picture.
You can have a big sigh of relief because data doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be good enough. It doesn't have to be perfect. That's where the art comes in on this. I want to turn to Srini right now. He's the risk management expert, and risk is a huge area for CFOs and business leaders in general, and it's such a big unknown in AI. How do we balance this idea of AI is a new technology, for most of us, and it's growing, with the idea of the innovation versus how we control it without over-controlling it? Do you have any tips for us in that area?
Definitely. Steve, thanks for that question. It's great hearing to Prashant, James, and Shikha on data quality, ROI, adoption, all that, right? And in the end, innovation drives everything. Probably this is a question that every executive team is asking today, Steve. CFOs are accountable for protecting the shareholder value, managing the financial risk, and then also ensuring that regulatory compliance is not compromised. At the same time, they know that they can't afford to fall behind in AI, right? So the challenge is not choosing between innovation and governance. Rather, it is designing the governance that would enable the innovation, right? So because you don't want governance to be a blocker or anything. So I would look at it from three perspectives. Organizations should start thinking about shift from risk avoidance to risk management. When I say that, every innovation carries risk. AI is no different than anything, right? You know, it's not just about technology, it's outside the technology, every innovation for that matter. Instead of organizations asking, how do we eliminate all the risk? They should start asking about how do we understand, monitor, and then manage risk while we encourage innovation. So this means that, you know, categorizing AI use cases by risk, for example, low risk use cases, internal productivity tools, meeting summaries, code assistance, these are of low risk because these are more internal ones. The medium risk, customer support, marketing content, knowledge assistance, these carry a little bit of risk because it can cause issues to your reputation, but the risk is low. Whereas there are higher risk use cases like, you know, financial decisions, healthcare, hiring, credit approval, legal advice, and all similar use cases. not every AI project needs to have same level of governance. So, you know, a risk-based approach can be followed, but the organizations move quickly where stakes are low while applying stronger control over the high impact use cases. The next one is build the guardrails. Don't make governance as a roadblock, as I said. Governance should be embedded into AI lifecycle. It should be like any typical process than considering that this is something on top of everything else. Now, key guardrails can be a clear data privacy requirements, clear security policies, human oversight for high impact decision making, model monitoring for accuracy, and then drifts, and then defined accountability for the business owners. You know, it's not that I define it and then I live it. I continuously monitor, and then somebody from the business should own that aspect. Think governance as a traffic signal rather than as a barrier. Good traffic systems, they don't stop the movement, but rather they make it safe and efficient for both the drivers as well as the public around. Third aspect I would see is measure the innovation and then risk together, not separately. So one mistake organizations make is measuring only AI adoption and not the risk. The successful organizations track both business outcomes like productivity, revenue growth, cost saving, customer satisfaction are measured, as well as risk indicators like the compliance incidents, data privacy violations, model performance, and then user trust and all that. A balanced scorecard will give a CFO's confidence that, you know, innovation is delivering measurable values while taking care of risk as well. So I'd like to say that governance is not a brake pedal on AI. Rather, it should be a steering wheel. Without AI, you may move fast. Rather, without governance, you may move fast, but you don't want to reach a destination, you know, by going through a lot of issues. You want to definitely reach your destination safely.
Well, that's really helpful. I mean, the traffic light analogy, a balanced scorecard, make sure you're looking at risk and opportunity innovation together rather than as separate pieces. That makes a lot of sense, Srini. Thank you for that. In your new book, Prashant, AI Opportunity Blueprint, you talk about this 5x5x5 AI compass. Can you jump into that for us a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, I got this idea from my business partner, Tobias Zwingben. He talks about the 5 AI capabilities, which is predict, perceive, create, act, and reason. Map it to the 5 solutions, which is assistants, chatbots, automated agents, and agentic, the 5 things. And then I use that and built on the 5 capabilities which you need to make it happen. One is data, algorithms, models, which includes applications, the output, and the ethics. So that's what I talk about 5x5x5, because the reason why I put this is because there is so much confusion about what AI is and what AI is not. People are thinking even like RPAs as AIs. People are thinking even a Power BI report as AI, because it's all like integrated and overlapping with different technologies, Copilot and the chat bots and LLMs and everything. So that's why I try to put this to demystify people about what AI can do and what AI can do. And ultimately, it's about decisions. And when we talk about decisions, it's all about probabilistic thinking. So we are making decisions about the future, and nobody can predict with 100% accuracy what the future is going to look like. So the chances of accuracy improves when we have better data so that the hallucination is reduced, so on and so forth. But ultimately, AI is all about decisions. So if you focus your thinking on less on automation and more on decisions, that's one more strategy you have to increase the success of your AI projects. As Shikha was talking about, technology for sure, data for sure, but the number one thing which we need for AI success to happen is organizational capabilities, the skills, the mindset, the thinking. All those things have to come together before we talk about the something which are more standard, like the data, technologies, and everything.
Great point. Well, thank you for that, and looking forward to the book. I got a draft copy the other day, so I'm really excited to buy the hard copy when it comes out. So thank you for that. And now for the final question for each of you, just to comment on and think about this. If every attendee remembered one important thing about this session, what would it be? Srini, why don't we start with you?
As I said, don't block innovation because you just want to control the risk or you don't want to take risk. Organizations need to take controlled risks while encouraging innovation. Otherwise, organizations will fall behind.
Great message for CFOs who just want to control the risk, but partner with your salesperson who wants to increase revenue. I think that'd be a good combination. James, your thoughts?
I'd say measure adoption, not just activity. Measure the right adoption metrics. The pilots, the licenses, the demos, PowerPoint pitch decks, and business cases. I think those are motion, but the value is it's a changed workflow with a baseline and an accountable owner. You've got to ask for the denominator of what? The percentage of what? What is underneath the top line item? Leaders should also pay attention to the often hidden human costs of change and adoption. And if those things are considered and factored into budgeting decisions, I think you'll quickly be able to see which ones of these AI bets that you're placing are actually going to pay off.
Everyone got a bonus from you because you gave us two good ideas. So thank you for that, James. Shika, what would you leave folks with?
I would say AI creates possibilities and organizational capabilities transform those possibilities into measurable business value. That's what I would want everybody to think.
Great. That's the big picture. And thank you for reminding us of that. That's great. Prashant?
I will talk about how to identify this problem. What I have seen in many places is people consider the symptom as the problem. But actually, you need to do a thorough root cause analysis to find out what those problem is. Because many times what happens is this automation problems or an RPA problems end up as an AI problem. But if you do this, it's going to be terribly expensive for you. There could be a better solution with RPA, with BI and everything, which are much cheaper, much effective. So it's better you do a root cause analysis to find out those kind of problems which have true business impact from an AI perspective.
So that's going to wrap up everything. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. Special thanks to our host, Prashant Sothakal, who kind of organized this with his team. Treaty, it was good to have you on here. Thanks for joining us, James and Shika. Wonderful to have you as well. Also want to thank the rest of the D2A2 team, which is Valentina Tomov and Tobias Wingman, who are behind the scenes helping us make this a success. So thank you for that. And thanks again for joining us today, and enjoy the rest of your week. That wraps up today's CFO Talk.